So, Carl, how often do cases like the Jones case come about?
They have, in recent months, come up on a fairly regular basis. There is, in fact, a textbook-related copyright case that will be heard by the Supreme Court in October. This is not uncommon.
In this case in particular, one of the witnesses that is cited in McGraw-Hill and Pearson's complaint states that at some points they were counterfeiting maybe up to 10,000 books per month. Would this be a big case for this, or is this on the smaller scale of operations like this?
I would think that this was a fairly large operation. 10,000 books to be what they refer to as being subject to a chop shop operation, having their covers removed, having new covers created and then rebound. 10,000 books can be quite a few. And if you think about the average cost of today's college textbook, if each of those 10,000 books cost at retail when sold to a student $100, you're talking about a pretty substantial amount of money.
It looks like what they're requesting was that a restraining order be filed so that, I guess, evidence and other things couldn't be destroyed, attempting to hide what was going on. And that seems like it would be the first step in more litigation. Is that a fairly safe assumption?
Yeah, it's the first step. They're going to request those kinds of restraining orders, either a temporary restraining order or some sort of injunction. They're going to ask for that on the front end. I think you're right, to avoid this destruction of any evidence. They want things frozen where they are. But they are probably also asking for it because at this time of year, we're, a month into most academic calendars. They could have been looking at the loss of a substantial amount of revenue if they were allowed to conduct this activity at the beginning of yet another semester. So I'm sure that they wanted it stopped as quickly as possible. The other thing that's important in these cases is usually if you can get it stopped immediately, if you cut off the cash flow that an infringer is making, it pretty much takes the wind out of their sails. Sometimes you don't even get to ultimately a final decision. The case will settle because if they're not making any money, it's just not worth it to them. So if you can put the brakes on it right away, sometimes that's really all the relief you really need.
And yeah, that was something I was wondering, is if a settlement in cases like this is likely. And you say, once the money stops, it usually is a settlement?
That's often the case, yes, because then it's really not in anybody's interest to let it drag on forever. Now, it really depends on how much of a fight the defendants put up in this case. The penalties for copyright infringement can be fairly steep. The penalties for trademark infringement, if it's found that it was a willful trademark infringement, in some cases can be tripled. You can get treble damages. They can also recover potentially all of their attorney's fees. So it also sort of depends on exactly how much money the defendants have. If they're never going to be able to pay the damages, maybe it's not worth it to go all the way to judgment. They'll settle for 50 cents on the dollar or some lesser amount and be done with it.
And what kind of things are the plaintiffs looking for when trying to litigate these copyright and counterfeiting cases?
My guess is in this case that they will actually try to recover some damages because they can probably point to at least circumstantial evidence that the infringing activity that went on here had a direct impact on their sales and their revenues, their bottom line. Some companies in some industries will never hope to recover damages because the damages are far too uncertain. I mean, they undertake infringement suits specifically to get the operation shut down, to stop whatever activity it is that's creating the infringement. And they don't have any expectation that they'll get damages. But I suspect in this case that McGraw-Hill and Pearson will be looking for some sort of damage payment.
And so what about criminal charges? Hypothetically, how often do those arise from cases like this?
Not as often as you might think. It really depends on the dollars that are involved and whether or not some of the activities go a little deeper than simply, and I say simply, although it can be really very complex, but just some sort of copyright or trademark infringement. Sometimes there are criminal enterprises here that are tied into other activities. There could be some level of fraud involved here, or some type of, you know, potentially an income tax related crime. It's going to be a little easier to get the U.S. attorney or the state's attorney to pay attention and to undertake an investigation in those circumstances. Usually, if it's just purely copyright or trademark infringement, they leave all of the enforcement to the civil side and they don't get very involved. It's out there, but it's not likely unless there's something else to it.
You know, obviously we can't speculate on the outcome of the case just because this is, you know, very early on and we don't have all the information. But from what from your knowledge, does this complaint look fairly solid against Mr. Jones?
The complaint itself, yes, looks fairly solid. And I believe that there are some news reports out there with comments from the plaintiffs here, from McGraw-Hill and from Pearson, that they ordered actual books from some of these companies before the lawsuit was filed. And if they have evidence in hand, physical evidence, showing that the international editions were in fact adulterated and then rebound and changes were made, then yeah, I think it probably is a fairly solid case. The other thing that the publishers here have going in their favor is this other case that's going to be heard in October. A different publisher, John Wiley & Sons, brought a lawsuit against an individual who imported international editions of textbooks that were produced abroad. And he didn't do anything to them. He just basically brought them into the country after buying them overseas and sold them on eBay. And the Second Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld a decision that he's liable for copyright infringement for that activity. This lawsuit being brought in New York is within the Second Circuit. So there is precedent out there. There's a prior case that suggests even if Southeastern Book or the other company, College Book, didn't do anything to the books, if all they did was buy them abroad and bring them into the country and then attempt to resell them, even that might be a problem. The fact that they went and adulterated the books and then attempted to pass them off as something else just makes things worse.
Well, Carl, I appreciate you joining me today.
Not a problem. Thank you very much.